White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 604.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! And welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, you out there in Pearlville or Jungle City or wherever you might be listening today or tonight, you are our Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
The mayor of Pearlville, John. How are you doing?
You know what? Somebody's got to clean these streets. They're not cleaning themselves.
The mean streets of Jungle City.
That's it.
Jungle. What is it called? What did he end up going with? It was Pearlville while it was happening, but he's changed it now to.
He didn't like Pearlville.
No,
because it was just on him.
Right. So it's like Jungle City or something, right? Isn't it?
I think so. Yes.
There's all a thousand street. There's a thousand stories in the naked Jungle City. Dun 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 dun. I like it. The streets of Jungle City. Great detective show. Man, there's just like novels and stories just waiting to be told based on this now. But it comes from the events of Saturday, which were welcome events indeed, would you say?
Amen to that. It was a glorious thing.
Well, we do have some football news to discuss. But first, we think that you will understand that we have something else that we really do need to talk about first. Because today, as we're recording this, Monday, January 24th, the Auburn men's basketball hooping Tigers are number one in all the land.
First time ever. And that doesn't happen often
No.
in athletics anymore, but a huge day. Again, poll by itself doesn't mean anything, but they earned it. And they are the best team in college basketball, the best college basketball team in America, and they showed it on Saturday in a great win over Kentucky.
Yeah, it's before anybody poo-poos it and says, you know, this is just January, what matters is March and April. I 100% agree. I know that you do too. But there is some significance to this, and that is that Bruce Pearl has been building a dominant program in Auburn, in the loveliest village, for several years now. And it's important when the whole sports media, the AP voters, recognize that they have reached the pinnacle of that. That is significant. It's significant for recruiting. It's significant for the stature of the program. Certainly, the number one that we want is at the end, not in the middle, and we understand that. But it's important to acknowledge and to celebrate that they did get there now.
That's right. And it's a celebration of the work the players and the coaches did to get to this point.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the way you can look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is worth noting. It's not the final prize. There's no nets being cut down. There's no trophies being handed out for it. But we can now say that we have a program that's been number one in college basketball, and that's not something we could have said yesterday or before. Although we should have been able to say it last week, but that's a whole other, that's a whole other issue. Guy raised us from like, what, ninth to sixth, and that was enough to, with all the other voting swinging our way, to get us easily over the top. So,
all right. What was your immediate reaction to the game, like 10 words or less?
Well, I mean, even before the reaction to the game, just watching the game, I was going bananas just watching the game like it was the SEC tournament or the NCAA tournament. I mean, it had that. Don't you think it had that kind of feel that it was like it felt like a March game?
Yeah, it felt like a huge game, a high stakes game, a high level game, and that the different, the shots mattered, possessions mattered. That's fair.
Well, then my reaction after it was now. Again, not to get too ahead of ourselves or anything, but my reaction after it was the way that I felt when the 2010 team beat LSU. season's only half over at that point when we played LSU, but you could see something in their performance against a very formidable opponent that you could take from that. In other words, if you had been shopping for NCAA tournament basketball tickets a week ago, I would say, you know, well, come on now. Now, I'm like, yeah, probably smart. Probably smart. Go ahead.
You're talking about Final Four tickets.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. No, 100%. I like the analogy because you know Kentucky's good. That's a really, really good basketball team. And the way Auburn played against them on Saturday means something.
Yeah. And, you know, we've said it over and over. This team, it's not just one thing, right? I mean, we're going to always compare it to the Final Four team, the 2019 team. That team, by the end, had several things it could do, but it took a long time to get to them. It was, you know, for a long stretch of the season, that team was hope Bryce Brown hits three-pointers to a large degree. And by the end of the season, there were other things they could do very well. This team is really just getting going in some ways, still learning how to play together with each other, still learning how to mesh as a team rather than a bunch of individuals, and yet they can attack you so many different ways, and they can defend you so many different ways, and they hit you in wave after wave, and they're second string across the board. Some of the second stringers, quote unquote, are better than the first stringers, depending on what you're trying to do, you know. So, I mean, they are deep, they are talented, and they're coming together better every game.
And they believe they're good. Like, they don't
they
doubt.
Do. They
don't.
They do.
They don't have, you know, that when they get behind, it's not like, oh, this is, we can't do it, you know. Mm. There's none of that.
This team possesses a near miraculous combination of swagger and unselfishness. That is so rare. Mm-hmm. You either have swagger, but you're a bunch of arrogant individuals, or you're a cohesive team, but you rise and fall with the vicissitudes of fate, right?
Well, if you're so unselfish, you may not be able to handle it when you get punched in the mouth a bunch.
Right, because nobody will step up. They think of playing together, and nobody's afraid. This team, this is a strange alchemic brew of extreme individual talents who, for 90% of the game, will put that individual swagger aside to be part of a cohesive group mechanism. But when the time comes, one of them will step up, if not more, and say, give me the ball, I'm going to fix this. In that Kentucky game, it was like five of them did that in different moments.
Mm-hmm. It was. And though they didn't, they were, you know.
At least.
They were, that's absolutely right. That's a good way to think about it because it wasn't all at once, and it wasn't just when things started going well. There were different times when we were down or Kentucky was making a run, or there were times when Auburn was starting to get it together when guys stepped up and said, you know, now let's put them on the ropes.
I mean, all right, let's think about it. The player that's the most visibly obvious at doing that is KD Johnson. He will take over if he feels like he has to. But otherwise, he does it. He plays his part of the system. No problem at all. Jabari Smith can always step up. I think they don't give him enough shots. They don't put the ball in his hands enough.
No, but he also stepped up on defense the last couple of games, too. He got some blocks on the inside. Mm. He was a big part of the rebounding and defensive presence on the inside. And when we need a shot, he will take the shot and make the shot.
And he's the one most likely to make the shot.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost shocking when he takes a shot and doesn't make it. That's from right. Any range. He's so smooth. Wendell Green. At the end, in the last 5 minutes of a game, look out. He can take over. He can do a little Jared, you know, a little Jared on him, you know, Jared Harper. We know Kessler, right? Through the whole game, Kessler can dominate, depending on each end. And man, we knew his defense, but his offense against Kentucky was what I think turned the tide because when we couldn't get anything else going, they could penetrate, you know, drive, penetrate, draw the defense, and then pass it off to him for a dunk. Over and over and over, that was like the only key that would unlock a door for us was that play, some version of that, getting it to him under the hoop, getting a dunk. Without that, we lose that game by 15 points.
Yep. But again, that's the same high screen stuff we've been doing since the St. Louis game.
Yeah.
And it's been at different times, and it's working, and it works because we got the shooters on the outside standing there waiting for the ball. Mm-hmm. Wendell or KD or Jabari or whoever, Flanagan, waiting for the ball on the outside on the wings if we get it to him. And then you got a really good ball handler with the ball and Kessler cutting at the basket.
Flanagan has had his moments. He has. I mean, he's been good in leadership, and he's made some free throws, but he hasn't really had that dominant moment yet. But no. I feel like it's coming.
He's not close to what he was before he got hurt. End of February, I'm targeting for when we need him to be all the way back. But at the beginning of that game, when it was crazy and things were going against us and we couldn't do anything right, Flanagan was like, "I got this." And took the ball and made plays. And then Auburn settled in and started playing our game. But Flanagan was like, "It's okay." And again, like the end of the Alabama game when it got frantic, he took control and made some plays. It was the exact same thing in the first few minutes when Kentucky was jumping all over us and the game seemed Auburn was a little too keyed up. Flanagan was like, "All right, settled in. Here we go."
Yeah. And there's others, but I mean, they really kind of jump out at me as making the difference when they need to. And what about, let's start at the beginning, everything leading up. There haven't been a lot of sporting events Auburn related in a while that were as exciting days before they happened, right? Like knowing that students were showing up outside the arena, bringing tents, setting up the village, 6 o'clock in the morning on Friday, okay? And then all day long Friday following what was going on there, into Friday night, hoping they didn't all freeze to death and have pneumonia and couldn't go to the game, And then getting up Saturday morning, and I'm really glad the game was at noon because we got up Saturday morning and we had just enough time to kind of check in with the news, see what was going on with all the kids out in the village, see if they got in safely and everything, and then, get your shower or whatever, get your lunch, sit down and enjoy. Didn't have to wait till 8 o'clock at night, Is right then.
And we got the CBS production, we got Bill Raftery and stuff. So that was the other kind of big game element of it.
Yeah.
Same people that are going to be doing the big tournament games. But it was the students camping out and the support for them was a huge piece of the lead into this game.
Yes. Yeah. It was amazing. And my younger nephew, we've spoken on this show before about my older nephew, but he's out in California now. And we still check in from time to time and chat about stuff. But this was my younger nephew who's a senior at Auburn right now. And he was out there in a tent with his buddy. They had didn't have any heat. They had their other, he did a little video report for one of the websites. One of the podcasts, or video shows. But he was out there with that whole crowd. And I'm just like, and then they were like, people were emailing Bruce and Bruce was replying back on it. Taking care of that, coming with pizza, it's just so cool. It's just so amazing. And it's not surprising that Bruce is so beloved because, when you combine winning, which, is goes a long way with everything he does with the community and with the fans and the students and everybody, my gosh.
Well, and I want to give some credit to the other people who took care of the students, too.
There was
a bunch of Auburn alumni who donated money and Pablo Escobar and Allie Davidson or other people took that and organized people to make runs to the grocery store and other places and brought food and hand warmers and bottled water and stuff. And they ordered pizzas. People ordered pizza as well. And then they also, in the morning, they had donuts and coffee and stuff for the students. So I appreciate everyone who did any of that kind of stuff. And again, we were the kind of people who would have camped out in the terrible weather to go to a basketball game because we're obviously crazy like
yes.
that. We did a podcast during the 2012 football season, if you don't believe that. So we would have been in there. Yeah. And it was wonderful to see that. It was exciting. Yeah. It was fun.
Yeah, I told Matthew, I said, we never stayed out all night for a game. We did get up early. It's in the book. It's in We Believe. We got up really early for the first time ever Iron Bowl. So we have nothing to complain about. We got to see our share of big things in our day, man. But this was so cool because and we did have a good basketball team in our day, but because our undergrad years were when the basketball team was still pretty good the first time.
That's right.
And then it was good again in late 90s, and now it's good again. But in fact, you and I were briefly exchanging notes today. We haven't really talked about it, about maybe we need to do a volume 3 if we believe the basketball years. And when I mentioned that on Twitter, like 100 and something people were like liking that tweet. So I'm thinking, you know, there's an audience for it. It wouldn't be as thick, obviously, but
it'd be fun.
It would be, yeah. And that information is out there, and a lot of it would be very current. I think you'd have to divide that book into like three sections. A little bit, just kind of at the beginning, saying how did we get to where it was in the '80s with Sonny Smith. You know, just kind of like the ancient history that you and I missed. And then you'd have a section on those '80s teams with Charles Barkley all the way through Chris Morris and the 88-89 team. And then you kind of have to have like the Cliff, you know, Tommy Joe, whatever. You have the Cliff Ellis period. You'd have a laughable couple of pages about Lebo and Barbie.
The Dark Ages.
The Dark Ages. And then you'd have that last 40% of the book would be Bruce. Yeah. So I'm already organizing it in my head, so that clearly means it's probably going to happen, doesn't it?
Van's already laying it out.
It's in my mind. I've already got the layout done. So there we go. All right. Well, we'll see. I don't know which will come first, part two of the football or part zero, or the old part of the basketball, but we'll see what happens. So we may want to slow our roll in the basketball because we may have big things to talk about coming forward, you know. So, but strike when the iron's hot. Well, all right. So we got through the night, got up Saturday. Got those kids up out of their tents, got in there to that game, and let's talk about now. You had a note here about the history of Auburn Kentucky series. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think that, you know, as much as Kentucky dominated not just the Auburn series, but Kentucky dominated the entire SEC for so many years. It used to be called, when there were 10 teams in the SEC forever, it was called Kentucky and the Nine Dwarfs. That's what used to call the SEC of basketball. That kind of changed in the 80s and 90s. When you got Arkansas for a while, Florida for a while, you know, that kind of thing. But it always has been Kentucky and then somebody else. Auburn has done remarkably, considering that we're kind of historically been the Vanderbilt of basketball in the SEC. We've done remarkably decent against them. I mean, we've had our moments where we beat them. And we're actually, don't we have like a 7-5 record against them the last couple of years or something? We're like 6-1 against them in Auburn now.
Yeah, that's right. We're like 5-1 in our last 6 matchups in Auburn. Okay. We had a 20 game losing streak. Jeez. Heading into 2016. Okay. Mm. And we won in Auburn. That was Bruce. And then we lost at Rupp. We won in Auburn. We lost in Auburn at home in 18-19.
The Final Four team.
We lost. Yeah, and we lost at Kentucky. That team got destroyed in Lexington.
Oh, I remember that.
Beat the same Kentucky team the third time
in the tournament.
In Kansas City. Mm. Won in Auburn, lost at Kentucky. Won in Auburn, lost at Kentucky. Won in Auburn on Saturday. So the last 10 games were 5-5.
Yeah. But
younger people don't understand how dominant Kentucky has been in the SEC basketball. Like, whatever you think about Alabama, Kentucky's dominance of basketball is bigger than that.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that Kentucky and the Nine Dwarfs comment. Our overall record against them historically is 22-92.
Yeah. God.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Well, even like the 99 team that was so good, they started the season like 19-1 or something. But that one was they had a home game against in Auburn against Kentucky, and Kentucky beat them. It was like the only loss they had that season going to the SEC tournament, I think, was that they had that one loss. I remember going into that game, and I'm like, we're finally going to beat Kentucky. And nope, we didn't. They rolled over us again. So that was the Doc Robinson and Damian Fishback team and Chris Porter.
That's right. But it says something about this team.
Yeah.
That they beat this really, really good Kentucky team.
Yes,
I mean, last year's team beat Kentucky, but Kentucky wasn't very good last year. And this is a really good Kentucky.
Kentucky does not like being challenged for their spot on top of the heap. Their fans have been salty the last couple of days. They do not like it at all. Well, let's talk about the game then. Kentucky came out. Let me tell you how I perceived the beginning, because I haven't really seen people that agreed with this, and I want to know what you think. So here's what I saw. We came out, and it seemed like whatever defense they were playing at the beginning, we couldn't do anything with it. When we would try to shoot long, they were right in our faces, guarding very, very closely. When we tried to penetrate down the lane or inside, we would turn the ball over. It just felt like they were a buzzsaw on defense the first 10 minutes, and we couldn't find anything we couldn't get in the lane. Whoever we had that had the ball could not get into the lane. If we went into the lane, we would get a very contested shot, or more likely, we would just turn the ball over. And I felt like something changed about a quarter of the way into the game. Maybe it was Ty getting hurt, whatever. But something changed about 10 minutes into that game, and suddenly we were able to generate offense. And after that, it was a pretty even game until, like, you know, in the second half, and we started to pull away a little bit. So did you perceive that the same way about us just not being able to get – we just couldn't penetrate their defense for a while?
And, again, it's probably what some other teams feel like when they play us, right? And I felt like for the first time – we played a team whose guards, I think, were, you know, faster and more athletic than our guards and bigger and could really, you know, hound them with the ball and cause problems. And I think you saw that in the opening minutes of that game.
Yeah.
I also think, you know, Toshibe is a great player.
Oh,
you know,
he was the best player on the court for either team during that game, I thought.
He was awesome, and he is a difference maker. And so I think – he's one of the few guys in college basketball that, you know, when we're running Kessler and Jabari Smith out there, can get rebounds and make plays inside against us.
Yes.
So I think that it was kind of those things together, along with the usual other five-star guys that Kentucky has on their roster who are doing the other thing, you know, who are attacking the basket or getting, you know, we really shut the rebounding down. We play good defense, but it was really us turning the ball over against their good defensive pressure. Mm-hmm. Once we stopped doing that, we stopped turning the ball over. We took that. And again, we're going to talk about the injury thing for Kentucky, but some of the turnovers were just Auburn, you know, making stupid passes. There was one play where Kessler made a terrible pass at the top of the key that the guy easily intercepted and ran back. And that was the kind of thing, like, you can get away with that against, you know, whatever, Ole Miss or whatever. You could not get away with that kind of lazy pass against Kentucky. So I think some of it was adjusting to the defensive intensity that we were facing and making good passes and good decisions with the ball. And once we did that, then it was different.
Yeah, there was no doubt that we adjusted things. It didn't hurt that they lost a player or two and that kind of thing. But again, they are loaded with five-star guys. So that shouldn't have hurt them that much. But yeah, their center was, I mean, there was even that one sequence, and I've watched the game like four times now. I've watched the little 20-minute replays, which are really cool on YouTube. There was a sequence where Auburn, by all rights, should have ended up with the ball when Kentucky missed a couple of shots. The play clock was down to 1 second, and Toshibe, he caught it at the free throw line falling backwards in a crowd of Auburn players and just chucked it up there and hit it. Made a perfect shot.
That was a ridiculous shot.
Yeah, absolutely. So he was able to get rebounds. He was able to score over Kessler. He really impressed me. He was all over the court.
He did, but also I would say the other side is, like, Kessler and Jabari Smith kept him from being more dominant.
Yes.
They got a couple of blocks against him. They altered a few shots. They got a lot of rebounds where, you know, he easily could have had 20-20 in that game if those two guys weren't all over him. So I think that was a big piece of it, is – them making plays against him and limiting him, that really, you know, kind of held Kentucky back.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and again, it was just different players that could step up at different moments, and this team has. I mean, there were moments where KD stepped up with his energy. He's such a spark plug.
And Wendell Green didn't have a point in the first half, and then came out, and there was a moment in the second half, and he was like, all right, right now, and poured it on.
Hit 2 3-pointers and played very, very well. Yeah. And when nobody else can stop the Kentucky run, Jabari, I mean, there was one moment where Jabari had two guys in his face, and he just went between them and hit a long shot. It's unbelievable.
And he does a turnaround jumper with two guys on him. That was insane. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, so. Or even the little things like under the goal on the inbounds play.
Yep.
Every, you know, the easy goals count as much as the hard ones and the flamboyant ones. And when we just inbounded to him and he put it in when they couldn't stop him. I mean, that was there. So, but so many dunks. It was really an interesting dunking contest for a while. Getting Kessler open under the, on the right side of the goal, we'd have the action on the left side and they'd just slot it right over to him. And so many, everybody contributed really, I thought. Except we didn't have the Berminator. No Lior.
Nah, he's banged up. He didn't play.
So. Yeah.
But I think that's a guy that the speed athleticism of Kentucky is not for him.
So. No. But it really, and I mean, the thought that we could roll people like that out there really is just kind of amazing. We've got like a good solid 11 usually in any game now that we've got Wesley back. I mean,
Flanagan.
Yeah, Flanagan. Allen. Okay, so we come to the end of that game, and it was just glorious. I mean, the fans, just the outpouring of joy in the stands. The players were so excited. There were football players there returning the favor from the Iron Bowl, which was so awesome to see.
There was just so much
fun at the end.
The moment when we steal the ball and get the one good. This is the other thing. We had no fast breaks basically in the game.
Yeah.
And we had that one breakaway dunk, and I really thought like the roof was going to blow off
Cambridge
at that moment. Yes, Cambridge got up and got it, and the crowd absolutely went ballistic at that point.
And the pass from Wendell just split right down the court, a long bounce pass that he caught and just went up and dunked it, and it That's when you felt like, look, if we can do this, and we're already leading, you know, we were maintaining like a good 6-point lead there for that stretch.
But I think that was a big thing because, like, that was the only fast break we got in the game, really. Kentucky was incredibly good at getting back on defense.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we play them again, we have to get more fast break points against them. We can't rely on another thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. They were so fast. All right, so what is this what is this victory and this game? Put it all in perspective for us. What does it mean?
I mean, I think first is that was not a fluky win. The injury mattered, but that was a great Kentucky team, a really, really good team. That's a team that could 100%, you know, win the SEC tournament or go to the Final Four. It could do those things. And Auburn beat them. And Auburn was down and came back and beat them. And took their best punches and rolled with it and made plays. And the team and Bruce celebrated, but then they were also like, okay, it's one win in January, not the national championship. We're just going to keep on, you know, now it's just back to business. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I really liked that. But it does matter. It matters in the sense of the SEC basketball race, right? It matters in the sense of our chance to win the regular season title, something we've not done a lot. And it matters from the perception standpoint that Kentucky is the gold standard. They're the best team we talked about. And beating them matters because of who they are and the uniform on their jersey. So I think that's the big piece. The perception of beating Kentucky like that, everybody in America watched and they know how good we are now. And yeah, this team, but also, I don't think this team has peaked. I don't think they're as good as they can be. I don't think they play their best basketball. And at the same time, like, you beat Kentucky, and you look around and go, okay, there aren't a lot of other teams on the schedule, a lot of games that are going to scare you like that one did. So.
But the guys and the fans got so up for that game from the first moment. They're not going to be able to do that for every game. But I'll say this, psychologically, that was big because now they know they can do it.
That's right.
The players now have the confidence that they know. A little more swagger. They had plenty already, but now they got a little more. They can back it up now. They can back that individual swagger up with team swagger, and I like that.
That's right.
But you have to get up for a game like this. I mean, I was just going to say, we play Missouri here in Columbia tomorrow, which is the day that many of you will be listening to this show, I believe. And any Auburn team prior to this year, I could totally see turning around and losing that Missouri game. In fact, I was there, you know, year before last, right before COVID hit, when they did lose to Missouri in Missouri.
The letdown.
Yeah. But I don't know that this team is that same way. I think this team can let down and still punch the gas and hit the nitrous on the dashboard when they need to, right? They did it with Ole Miss. They did it with Alabama.
And it's like, because we talked about, even if three guys have an off night at Missouri, there's plenty of other guys who are going to step up and have great nights, and that'll be enough. And even if they're not shooting great, everybody on this team plays their rear end off on defense. They play great individual defense and team defense, and it must be miserable to play against them.
Oh, gosh. Absolutely. So we've now got at least a 1-2 game lead in the SEC, right? Two, yeah. And then below Kentucky in second, it really is like everybody's 3-3 or 3-4 or 4-3 or whatever. We talked about this the last 2 weeks that they're beating each other up. It's not like Alabama's beating everybody or Arkansas is beating everybody. They're beating each other up pretty much 50-50, which is exactly what we need, because they're eliminating each other back and forth.
And again, we have a bunch of tough games left. We got to play Mississippi State on the road. We got to play Arkansas. We got to play Tennessee and Florida on the road, right? But all those teams have to play each other and Kentucky. So they're like you said, you predicted earlier on, they're going to cannibalize each other and get more losses. And the current prediction is that we're going to win the SEC regular season by 3 games.
And that's over Kentucky, not to mention anybody else. It'd be lower than that.
So, again, we could, if we win the rest of our home games, we could go 500 on the road the rest of the way and win the SEC.
Unbelievable. Assuming that Kentucky loses another game or two, right?
No, that's if they win out, we could go 500 on the road and we'd still win the SEC. And one of our road games is like Georgia.
So. Yeah. Oh, I'm looking forward to that. I wish I could go to that, man. That was so fun last week. We didn't even talk about that game really, but who cares? It's not worth talking about. So we've got Missouri Tuesday in Columbia. It's a late game. It's 7:30 Central, 8:30 Eastern.
They're a very up and down team. They've lost to bad teams and then they beat good teams.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. That's true. They've always been like that as a program. I will not be at that game because it's a Tuesday late. That's the only freaking reason, is that it's a Tuesday late game and we wouldn't get back. The game would probably go from 7:30 to 9:30, 10 o'clock, and we get back at like 1 o'clock in the morning, midnight, 12:30, something like that, and it's a school day, and it's just not going to work. It sucks, but I wanted to go, but we can't. Although I'll probably end up staying up as late as that anyway, because we didn't talk about the whole Twitter meme storm. Good Lord, it kind of reached its Category 5 for the Kentucky game.
We did mention that. You were right. That's a good callback.
Oh, man. I had like 5 new ones made to unleash, and I did. I had the one I was really proud of, though, is that Bruce kept saying this is going to be a Clash of the Titans, Clash of the Titans. So I had Harry Hamlin, Perseus from Clash of the Titans, holding up the Medusa's head with the UK on it, and he had the AU on it, and I said, Clash of the Titans, ? Turns out there was only one Titan. I was just like, I wanted Auburn to win that game, obviously, but I also wanted Auburn to win that game so I wouldn't waste this stash of memes I was so proud of, including that one. I wouldn't have ever gotten to use that one again. That one only worked for this game because of what he said, you know. So thank goodness, for the sake of my meme storm, thank goodness that we won. So it had multiple motivations. We play Oklahoma Saturday in the Big 12 Challenge.
Yeah, we play Oklahoma Saturday. It's 2 p.m. Eastern on TV. Oklahoma not great this year. Again, the way these challenges work is in the preseason they match up where the teams are predicted to finish. Right. So we are predicted to finish 5th or 6th or whatever in terms of Oklahoma. And so that's what it is. And so, they're 12-7. 5-7 in the Big, or 2-5 in the Big 12. So they've lost 4 games in a row. So it's on ESPN Saturday, 2 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Central. I think we're going to be in good shape for that one.
What I say to the person that predicted us to finish 5th in the SEC?
Maybe Pope is just not your game, Mike. I know. Let's have a spelling contest.
That's what I say to them, right? Clearly, maybe basketball's not their game. They should focus on a spelling contest.
But it's fair because we were predicted to finish fifth and we're in great shape to potentially win the SEC. But the SEC is not worse because of that. The SEC is really strong in basketball, and I think some of these teams, you know, are going to go in the NCAA tournament and go beat up on some people.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that Kentucky team is going to do some damage when they play non-conference teams. So
I expect them to. All right. Well, we do have a little bit of football talk to get to before we hit our halftime stretch here. I guess at this point it'll be a three quarters. There have been some changes to the football coaching staff. And by the way, we will talk more about basketball, obviously, as we go along throughout the rest of the next few months. So don't think that we are an Auburn football podcast, but there's no way we can't talk about basketball when it's like this, right? I mean, you know.
And we got listener questions about basketball. So if you want to, again, I'm going to do some kind of warning here. Some of you are in a happy place and you want to stay there and you don't want to venture into the football world. You want to stay in the happy place. And I respect that.
Okay? Yes, we understand.
So I would say fast forward about 5 or 6 minutes and then come back.
Come back for listener questions.
That's it.
There we go. All right, so Derek Mason is gone. What do you take from that? Just what is that?
One of the things I take from it is Brian Harsin was hired and immediately had to hire other coaches. There was pressure on him to hire people from the South or people with SEC experience. Derek Mason was available, wanted a good job. Auburn needed a good defensive coordinator and a guy who knew the SEC. They had never worked together. They didn't really know each other. They probably talked the first couple of times on the phone or on Zoom or whatever, right? So I think it's like a lot of these things. So one part of it is I think you have people that didn't really know each other who then working together every day after that. And sometimes it's one of those things like Derek Mason has been a head coach for years and he had to go back to not being the head coach. And we'll talk about what kind of job he did or whatever. But the other part is I think, at some point, I think he and Harsin decided that I think Mason wanted to go his own way. And that was okay. You know, that's okay. So
kind of a mutual parting of the ways.
I think so. I think Derek Mason, if Derek Mason wanted to come back and really wanted to come back, I think he'd probably be the defensive coordinator today.
Well, when you leave Auburn, D.C. to go be a head coach somewhere, I get it. When you go to Oklahoma State to have the same job you already had at Auburn, I feel like there was probably pressure for you to go.
It's fair, or you didn't want to be at Auburn anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And you're just looking for the nearest trap door that gets you still a paycheck.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Well, we know that Harsin is comfortable with his own people, and now he's got one as defensive coordinator. So
Schmetting.
Yeah. I don't feel that bad about it.
I was very excited about Derek Mason. Mm-hmm. When he was hired, I think he's a really good coach and a good recruiter. I wasn't happy early in the season, but I think the defense came along and was really strong the second half of the season. They had one terrible game, Mississippi State. We talked about that a lot, but the other games, the defense was great. It was really good.
And the Iron Bowl, it was lights out.
Yeah, it was as good as it could possibly be. So it's what it is, and we'll talk about Mason and the overall effectiveness piece. But I get it. I mean, we have a lot of talent coming back on defense, and so Schmetting is in a good place to succeed. He's been a defensive coordinator before, and Harsin trusts him, so that matters.
Exactly. So. Jimmy Brumbaugh is our defensive line coach, and Christian Robinson is linebackers coach. So we've got a real shakeup on the defensive staff, even as we're bringing in all these transfers and defensive players. It's really interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, Nick Eason left to go to Clemson, and that was, kind of the beginning of this, right? Mm-hmm. And we've offered a couple of other people as defensive line coaches and able to get who we wanted. And so Brumbaugh is obviously a former Auburn player and a popular one at the time. He was at Kentucky for a while and did a really good job there. And he's at Tennessee for a couple of years and he's been other places. So I think, a guy with SEC experience, he was really good when he was at Kentucky. They were very effective under him. And at the time, Auburn you know, a lot of Auburn fans wanted us to hire him then, but we didn't have an opening for him at that point. So it, some of it was just that. Robinson was, you know, he was the Florida linebackers coach the last few years. And we saw, like, in 2019, that defense was pretty good. They knew what they were doing. So he's supposed to be a good recruiter also. So that'll help some. So, and we kept Zach Etheridge. He's going to coach the entire secondary. Before, he was coaching cornerbacks, and Mason was coaching safeties. So that'll be, and I think, probably a good thing.
But I've heard whispers that he's not happy, though. You think we're going to hang on to him for another year or something?
I think he wasn't happy. I think he was unhappy, you know, with Mason leaving stuff. But I also think, like, he's coaching the whole secondary, and they made him recruiting coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
So he got a coordinator title out of it, and I'm sure a bump in salary. So I think, that's it.
He's suddenly happier than he was 5 minutes ago.
But also, I think he's emerged as a great recruiter and maybe the best recruiter on the staff. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they definitely need that. We need an offensive recruiter that can recruit the way the defense can recruit, that's for sure.
Amen.
So I was just noting that it took Tuberville 3 years before he lost his offensive and defensive coordinators in the same year. So 1 year and they're both gone. That's really interesting. I mean, it's just surprising to me. 1 year and boom, clearing them out. I guess it's a different world than it was in 1999, 2000.
It is a different world. And I wonder, Tuberville, picked the guys he wanted and was happy with them. And I think, like I talked about, I think there were some circumstances that led Harsin to not be as happy. I'm not saying these guys were chosen for him or anything else, but I know that he was pushed to hire SEC guys and not just bring his entire Boise group.
Yeah.
And so part of this is, yes, it is, Tuberville 3 years later fired them both, and that worked out, right? He turned things around and got where he wanted to be with the new guys.
Well, his new guys were Chizik and Bobby Petrino. And that's not too bad of a combo coming in.
They kind of know what they were doing at the time. So, so I think that's a big thing, is who are you comfortable with and who can you work with? But also, Tarson's head that's on the block. He's the one that's got to make the calls about who he wants to be the coordinators and who he's comfortable with. But at the same time, that's great. It happened. Now we need some stability. Okay. We need to get through a couple of years here without a ton of changes on the coaching staff.
That would be nice.
That's my hope. Yes.
We'll see. All right. Let's see. Anything else about basketball and football other than we're going to get to in the listener questions, I suppose.
Did you want to talk about comparing this team to other teams historically, or you want to save that?
The basketball
team.
Yeah, let's save that.
All right.
Yeah, I was kind of curious who would win between this team and the 2018-2019 team, but
Okay, this is what we're going to do. You, the listeners,
there you go.
You tell us what you think, okay? And I want to break it, not just because the Final Four team was not the best regular season team, okay?
No.
The year before, we won the regular season SEC title, and they only made it to the second round, but that was a great team too. Mm-hmm. And then we had the team 2 years ago, with Okoro and those guys that didn't get to play in the NCAA tournament, but were kind of peaking at the right time and looked like they could go do a bunch. So I think throw those in there. You could pick whatever 80s team you want. You pick the 99 team. Who do you think would win and why?
I need to go back and watch some film or something, because the 98, 99, 2000, I remember those teams were really, really good. But I remember that none of them got past the Sweet 16. They never made the Elite Eight like the 86 team did. And the best team that we had lost to Ohio State in the Sweet 16, who actually made it to the Final Four that year. So, yeah, but other than that, I am curious. So that's a good idea. Let's see what the folks out there think, and we'll get some answers in, and then we can kind of look at their answers and talk about what we think. So that's a good idea. All right, let us thank our patrons really quickly. Remember, we don't do ads. So we need your support to do shows like this. And we are, over the next year or so, presumably going to be putting together either Volume 2 of We Believed or We Hoop Believed. I don't know what we'll call it. The Auburn basketball book. We'll do that. And we also did that documentary audio series, which I think is at 8 parts now. We've We need to go back and finish out the Gus section.
Reports from the mean streets of Jungle City.
I like it. Jungle City, that's what they should call it, man. That sounds like a political book during the presidential years. Jungle City, like something that Lehrer would write. But anyway, Jim Lehrer. But anyway, so yeah, we depend on you guys to make us be able to do these things for you guys, for you and everybody. So go to www.auwishbone.com and join up, become a part of the family. And we thank every member of the family every freaking episode because it's always one of our favorite parts of the show. So, www.auwishbone.com. Here are the fine folks who are currently supporting us and keeping this boat running, keeping this basketball team that is this podcast slam-a-dunkin'. We have to thank Samuel Salvatore, Chris and Clinton Stewart, Brandon Sisson, Carl Von Drunker, Dr. Crackham, Patrick Hayes, and then Bradley Blackman, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AU Fan at KSC, Logan Chilton, Matthew Flowers, Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor. By the way, remember, you can put whatever you want in your name space. So just go to go back to patreon.com, or if you're going for the first time, go to our, you know, look for Van Allen Plexico or White Rocket, and just where it says your name, put whatever you want. Some people put ads for their own thing. That's fine for this segment. People put funny things. It's just a big kick. Or just put your name. That's great, too. Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, Ann Kanzian, AU Falling Up, Ben Bloodworth, Brian's Not Harsin' Around, Chris Thrash, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Hegler, Earl Ricks, Eric Morgan, Bobby, George Gaston. I'm checking something here. Okay. Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Ole Miss's Miracle Medical Staff, Algorithm, Paul Miles, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Sarah Brown, Steve Harlan, Tank the Hunter, Theodore Geary, Valiant Hermes, War Eagle Always, WDE Richie. Plus, we also have to thank, and the computer's being slow, so round and round the little wheel goes. Oh boy, that's not good. I'm not sure it's actually showing the right thing anymore. Okay, good. Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, you lost to the Twitter meme army of the number one Tigers. Yeah, Rusty, there we go. Well done. Well done, well done, well done.
Please clap.
Auburn Blue, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Brandon Smith. Calipari will now ask Saban how to change the rules. It's about safety. Very well done. Very well done there. I'll give you that one too.
Please clap.
Carter Glaus, Cato the Barner says Chance Lawyer 9636 is an unreliable source of Auburn information. Ooh, shots fired in the Patreon. Shots fired in the Patreon. Krista Hilton, Colby Butler, Corey Smyer, Darius Benton, David Simpson, Die Bama. Oh, they did. They're not doing so well. They're on life support now. Eric Mahan, Heather and Yancey Steingrabber, helping Van upgrade his installation. Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kenoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton. Listen to hellbentatl.com and
smoke weed every day.
I like it. Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Russell Millings, Saban needs a new toupee, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, this is the year, Jinxo Jordan has improved so much on this new offense, he's focused, he's having fun, Tim Pittman, Timothy, Tony Perry, Wiggle87, Alex Nguyen, Alex Querard says War Eagle Brian Pittman is my best friend, woo, all right guys. Alum of a basketball school. I like that one. Auburn Elvis. And finally, Ben Amos, Ben Hanshew, Ben Regas, Brian Albanese, C. Braun, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Colonel Dad, Construction Tiger, Daniel Barnett, David Smiley, Elizabeth Donald. Go.
Okay, we got to get better at celebrating.
Yep. I'll buy this for a dollar. James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht, Jeremiah Schumann, John Samuel Schinker, Jingleheimer Schmidt, that's a good one too, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, John Soundboard, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, JT Jarhead, Justin Bean, Kenneth Brent Rains, a.k.a. Auburn Dad for life. Let's take a trip around the SEC. Said, wait a minute, we're getting ahead of ourselves here. Mark Squire, MVP, captivating Kathy Bright. Paul Bankson, Robert Drain, Royce Alvarez, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland. That's the truth, Ruth. Stephen Thompson, the artist formerly known as Spanky. Oh, he's not formerly known as Spanky anymore. Or he is formerly known as Spanky. This is the year that Walker Kessler has improved so much in Pearl's defense that Bruce will fall asleep in his chair. Bob Sam. Way to go, Bob. Trevor Johnson, Walter Kessler's vibranium chest. Brent Rumble, Chris, and our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all. Go to www.auwishbone.com. Click on the big orange button and we will see you there. All right, John, I think we've got a new guest of the game. You ready?
Bring it.
Let's do it. Here comes Jared with this week's installment.
Hello, Van, John, the rest of the Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist, aka Jinxie Jared, here with Guess the Game number 40. Hope you like the new intro music. That's the theme song to Airwolf, which is the only thing I'm allowed to watch while Auburn's men's basketball team plays. Because when I do watch, we lose. When I watch Airwolf instead, we win. So I'll keep watching Airwolf for all of you. Anyway, let's get into Guess the Game number 40. Guess the Game number 40 is brought to you by Rusty Owens, and it goes a little something like this.
One fumble recovery. Now, for Auburn, has nine tackles. Five of them are solo.
Well, you figure it's going to be time.
Yeah, you would certainly think so. And he gets it. And he bounces outside, and he is loose. At the 20, 15, 10.
All right. I will see you guys in the hint file.
All right. Well, what do we know about that? What information can we glean from it immediately?
I believe that was Ron Franklin.
It was Ron Franklin and Mike Gottfried.
So it was an old school ESPN game a long time ago.
At night.
At night. Probably a home night game, but probably. I'm not positive about that. Auburn scored on a big run, a 42-yard run.
By back, presumably.
He talked about fumbles. Was he talking about us fumbling or recoveries? I'll have to listen to that, the hint file to get that one. What else did you get out of that?
Well, it seemed like they knew who was going to get the ball. Like we had a
star back.
Yeah, and they're like, this seems like it's going to be bleep time. And he said he got it. He busted it outside and went like 42 yards, which could be a Cadillac.
Be Rudy.
It could be Irons in 05. Mm-hmm. We didn't really have anybody that was doing that in 06, 07, 08. And then by 09, I don't, or 10, I'm not sure Ron Franklin and Gottfried were doing games anymore.
No, I don't think so. So I think it's somebody that, or I think it's Kenny Irons, you know, Carnell, Ronnie, or Rudy Johnson. Those are my guesses. So okay.
But we didn't really have a lot of evidence of like what game it was there, though. You know what I mean? It's like all we knew was that Auburn was playing a night game on ESPN and a running back busted a 40-something yard run. I mean, that's about all the information we have.
It could have been with that description, that could have been any of those guys.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because you know that at that time, Auburn was on ESPN more than any other team.
Yes. Yes. And, okay.
So there's a lot to choose from. That's a problem. If we'd only been on there one time, it'd be easy. But we're on there 50 times.
Yeah, we're on there all the time. So do you think it was a home game? Because I was going to say you think it was.
I feel like, didn't it sound like the crowd was
cheering when they scored?
Yeah. Okay. I think.
Because I was going to say Irons at LSU.
Oh.
His signature game.
Yeah, 05. But we lost that game, and Jared doesn't do losses. Yeah.
We missed a bunch of field goals. So.
Yeah. Good thought, but that eliminated it. So that's good. That eliminated that one. So
I don't know. Let's go to the hint file.
Let's go to the hint file. That's a good one. I like when we have to really rack our brains about these. Let's go to the hint file.
Welcome
Jared.
To the hint file. Let's get rid of those bleeps and give it a listen.
One fumble recovery, and Lincoln now for Auburn has nine tackles. tackles. Five of them are solo. Clay Figgert's going.
Hold on.
Alex Lincoln.
Alex Lincoln at linebacker.
Walk-on linebacker from Mississippi College.
Oh yeah, you have a connection to him, right?
Yeah.
Were you there when he was there, or was that?
I was an adjunct professor at Mississippi College, like after he was there, I think. So.
Okay, so are we talking '90s then? Late '90s, early 2000s? I can't remember.
Yeah, it was in the '90s. We're talking about the '90s here. We're talking about. We're talking about the late 90s.
We didn't have a dominant running back 96, 97, 98, 99.
I thought Alex Lincoln played for Tuberville.
All right. Then
I want to say Rudy Johnson then.
What if it's Rudy Johnson, the Georgia game in 2000?
I like it.
All right, let's
keep going with the
start back up.
It'll be Rudy time. Yeah. You would certainly think so.
Interesting. Interesting send-in by Rusty. I will see you guys in the answer file.
All right. So we got the right player, which means we got the right year because he only played for us in 2000. That's the only year. So we know it's a 2000 game, and I think probably Georgia. I can't think of what other game would be a big night game with ESPN. No,
I like
that year.
I like it.
Yeah. And by the way, man, Ron Franklin just – to the fifth, you know, the fifth, to the 15, to the 10, to the 5. Touch. I just love everything about the way he and Gottfried, they were so good together. I know there's other situations, and that's fine, but man, I miss that. I miss that chemistry they had. All right, here we go. We're saying 2000 Georgia Rudy Johnson.
All right, John and Van, if you guys settled in that this was Auburn playing Ole Miss in 2000 and Rudy Johnson doing Rudy Johnson things to get us the tying score, and I believe the point after gave us the go-ahead, well, then you were right. This is Auburn Ole Miss 2000. Thanks to Rusty Owens for sending that in. If you have a suggestion for Guess the Game, you can send them to me on social media. I'm at Yard Sale Artist, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all at Yard Sale Artist. Or you can email me at Jared, that's J-A-R-R-O-D, at theyardsaleartist.com. And until next time, I'm going to get back to Airwolf. Jinxie Jared will do his job, and war eagle.
All right. Okay, Airwolf. I appreciate Jared watching all that Airwolf for us for the cause. I've got to say, though, I would not have said Ole Miss because I remember the Auburn Ole Miss game in 2000. It was the one where Tuberville made his return to Oxford 2 years after leaving, right? Because 99 was his first year at Auburn, and we played him in Auburn because I was at that game. That's the one where we missed the field goal. Duvall missed the field goal at the end, and they kicked an extra, you know, they in overtime, they won. If we'd won that game, we'd have gone to a bowl game. 2000, we went back to Oxford. There were all those signs, like, you know, about Tuberville and the Pine Box and everything. That was the Deuce Staley team, who's, by the way, doing a great job as a commentator now, but he was a great running back for Ole Miss, and he ran back kicks for him, too. He was very dangerous.
He was good.
Yeah, he was a good player, good SEC football player. And I thought, I remember, here's the memory I have. I have a distinct memory of that game. I remember that my girlfriend at the time and I were at like her apartment in Atlanta, I think. And we were walking through the parking lot and it was like broad daylight. I felt like it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I remember her saying, all right, we got to go do this. And I'm like, no, the Auburn Ole Miss game's about to start. So if Ron Franklin and Gottfried were doing that game, that would have been like a 6:30 Central start. So why was I thinking the game was starting at in the afternoon if it was a Ron Franklin? That's just a mystery to me now. I'm going to have to research this one. I trust Jared and I believe what I heard, but I just, you know, it's one of those things where your own memories conflict with the evidence and just you start second guessing. So anyway, all right, well, that was a really good one. That was tough.
Yeah. Thanks Jared. Thanks Rusty Owens. That was a really good one. That
yeah.
was a good game.
Because we really didn't have anything to go by for the actual game except that they had a long run. But that was true in several games. So we kind of had to just roll the dice, and I thought we had a good logical pick.
So. We had the announcers that gave us the time period that we had the long run, but I thought we got pretty close. I thought it was pretty good.
We got really close, yeah. Okay. I've lost the soundboard. Rejoice or cry at your choice. Oh, here it is. So now...
And there was great rejoicing.
I think I had to push this button now.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right. So what do we got?
We have listener questions. I'd like to thank the listeners who emailed us at auwishbone@gmail.com or got at me on Twitter with these questions. All right, the first question is from Donnie Reynolds, who asked a question that you asked earlier. Is it really a bad thing that Derek Mason left? Was our D under him really that good?
Well, right. We've talked about that. I guess there is some question. Did Schmetting actually call the defense for the Iron Bowl?
What I've heard is that's a no.
Okay, so it's just that's not an accurate thing then.
I don't think that's real, yeah. So the question is, you know, how good a job did Derek Mason do, right? I did what I do in these questions. I went and looked at advanced stats. I looked at Bill Connolly's SP Plus. I looked at went to Football Outsiders and looked at the FEI, the Brian Freemo's defensive advanced stats. And so, like in FEI, Auburn was 20th in defense this year. Okay, in 2020, we were like 60th in defense.
Hmm.
And in 2019, we were third. Again, not a shock. In 2018, we were 12th. So I think he improved the defense, but I think he, you know, and I think he made the defense better. The other thing is, I think, you know, people, because of the record, you know, people forget kind of what the defense did kind of game by game, right? I just want to throw this out there, right? This was the end of the season, right? After we lost to Georgia at home. Arkansas allowed 23 points. Ole Miss allowed 20. A&M allowed 20. Again, there were Mississippi State was terrible. Again, they torched us 43 points. Mm-hmm. South Carolina allowed 21. Alabama allowed 24 in multiple overtimes.
Three overtimes.
Houston allowed 17. Okay, so
those are all scores we should win.
Yes. When I tell you those scores, the defense did their job.
Yes.
The defense did enough to win those games.
We should win every one of those games with scores like that, 100%.
100%. So that's what I'm saying is when you know, in modern football, when you're holding teams to 24 points or below, you should win.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So the fact that we didn't win those games is not on Derek Mason.
That's
so
true.
I think he did his job and did well enough and made plays. And I think the defense kind of got better as the year went along, which is what we want to see. So my answer is yes. I think he did do a good job. But I'm not saying it's not the end of civilization, but it's also, you know, it's not nothing either.
So. Yeah.
All right. Next question is.
By the way.
Go ahead.
Talk about, I looked it up. The Ole Miss game was a 6:08 kickoff. So it must have just been broad daylight at 5:30 in Atlanta. In September, whenever that game was. So, yeah, memory's funny thing, you know?
It is.
So there you go.
All right. Our next question comes from friend of the podcast, Jared Albrecht.
Yes.
Who says, this is the first time I've experienced Kentucky basketball Twitter, and wow, they are not good at taking a loss. He said, I've seen some debates over whose Twitter takes an Auburn loss worse, Alabama football or Kentucky basketball.
Yeah.
And I'm flummoxed on this one. What are your thoughts? He says, he says, additionally, I was in Auburn when Kentucky football beat Auburn for the first time and was dang proud of how the Auburn family handled it. And truth be told, I was proud of how the Kentucky fans acted too. I guess basketball is their kryptonite.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. It's the teams that don't lose much that don't know how to lose with any class, with any dignity, and just cry and whine. You know what's funny? In the 90s, early 2000s, you know what fans were really bad at that? Florida. because they had that run with Spurrier, and they got as arrogant as he was. And we love Spurrier, but you know he was an arrogant son of a gun. And it it rubbed off on those fans. And, man, when they would lose a rare game under Spurrier, they were so salty. Oh, my goodness. They couldn't take it. They couldn't stand it. So, yeah, it goes
around. I like this. I like this comparison by Jared. Mm-hmm. Kentucky basketball, Alabama football.
Yes.
They were a lot of whining.
Oh, one of my favorite tweets, because it's a lot of it was memes, but I saw a tweet. I forgot who it was now, but I thought it was a very underrated tweet, as we say. Somebody said, the Alabama fans are upset now because their favorite football team and their second favorite
basketball team
and they were referring to like something like that, but it was like their favorite football team and their favorite basketball team both lost.
Oh yeah,
basketball meaning Kentucky, because the Alabama football basketball team won, but they were saying Kentucky's their favorite basketball.
No, this is the bandwagon Alabama fans that are some of them that also like Kentucky basketball. Yeah, because, yeah, I get because it. Those people only, the worst.
They're such winners, John, that only Kentucky basketball is worthy of their support. They can't even support their own. Because they don't care about their school. They only care about that football team. And they think they're such winners that only a team like Kentucky in basketball is worthy of the kind of support that they give that football team. It's absolutely makes me want to throw up.
Patriots at Yankees fans or whatever. Oh, so forget
whatever.
Those
ridiculous.
All right. Next question's from Bill Miner, who says, serious question. If you had to change a light bulb, would you get Walker Kessler to do it, or could you have Katie Johnson stare it down and the light bulb would fix itself?
That's the way to go right there. Yes. That's such yes. a good question. And then he'd jump around and scream about it. Absolutely. I love it.
All right. Our next question is from Keith L. Spawn, who says, was Ty Ty missing the reason Kessler had 7 dunks or the reason Auburn had more rebounds than Kentucky, or both?
Yes, a good question. And they were the number one rebounding team in the country. We out-rebounded them. I mean, yes. That kind of says it all right there.
Well, and I think Tshiebwe had like 14 rebounds and the rest of their team had 10, 12, something like that.
Yeah,
so,
doesn't surprise me. Yeah, we had like 27 or something. We had more than they did, I know that, by a couple.
All right, next question is George Gaston, who says, Auburn was generally picked to be the 5th best team in the SEC behind Tennessee, Bama, Arkansas, and Kentucky. What has been the single most important factor in Auburn's domination so far this season? Finally, how much bonus compensation does Bruce earn for unused timeouts? It's hard to argue with the results. I'm sure the players appreciate the gesture of confidence. Also, have you considered traveling to New Orleans the weekend of the Final Four, regardless of whether you buy tickets to the game themselves?
All right. Let's work through these one at a time. Let me from backward to forward. As far as New Orleans, I generally don't have a history of going to places. I'm not going to say I have a blanket policy. I've never really thought about it, honestly. When I go somewhere like that, I go with the intention of going to the event. I assume that you would party in like the bars or something, but I would honestly, I'd have more fun just hanging out with my family if I'm not at the event, you know, so I wouldn't go just to go. I appreciate that some people love that kind of thing, and that's wonderful. That's just not my thing.
Yeah. No, I love New Orleans. I love the food there, and it's a nice place to be, but it would be tough to not go to the game. And, again, when the Final Four is in town, the hotels and the restaurants are going to be expensive and packed. So you either got to go to go or – again, my thing is the SEC tournament's in Tampa. Get tickets now. Get hotels now. You know, the first couple rounds of the NCAA tournament, we're not sure where we're going to be. You know, there are some places that, you know, if we're the overall number one seed, we will go to, I think it's South Carolina. That'll be where the closest first round site to Auburn is. So we would be sent there if we were the number one overall seed. But that's not a guarantee by a long shot. So we could get sent to Chicago. Some other places. So I'm here.
No, I'm just like, hello, come to Chicago. No. That's I'm actually closer to the Final Four site than I am to the SEC tournament site. And it's not even close. I mean, it's not even close, you know. So I'm all for Chicago or New Orleans, man. That's fine with me. I'm right in the middle between the two.
I appreciate his question about bonus compensation Bruce earns for unused timeouts.
Yeah, that's good.
He is stockpiling them, but it's also, he doesn't overcoach. I think a lot of college basketball coaches do the overcoaching thing
where they're like micromanaging the team all the time. And again, you can, you know, scheme up plays and stuff, but also at some point you have to let the players play and make their own decisions and adjust to things. And you can call certain plays, inbound plays, or certain sets at certain times, or change up the defense. But you don't need to call a timeout to settle the team down all the time, because there's going to be a time in a big game when you don't have a timeout to spend, and that's when you're going to need it. And you need the team to be able to do it, to be able to be mentally tough enough to not need the timeout, not need the coaches to settle them down. So
yeah,
I'm fine with it.
And his first question was about
what's the single most important factor.
Yeah,
Auburn's dominant so far this season.
I like that one. I think it's that the players that we weren't sure how they would work out, like Kessler, have been playing up to their potential, and that they've come together as a team faster than we thought they would. I think it's those two factors to me.
Yeah, I love that. The unselfishness and the willingness to be a part of something bigger than yourself is a big piece of it, 100%. But then also I think it's the defense to me. The biggest difference is our defense is so, so good. One of the stats I've seen a couple times recently is in the last, 15 years or so, only teams that are in the top 40 in both offense and defense have a chance to win the national title. And there's only like 10 teams on that list this season, and Auburn is at the top of that list. You know, it's not shock. Auburn, Arizona, Gonzaga, some of those kind of teams.
Baylor, but, probably.
Yeah. So that's something to keep an eye on. All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Next question is from Ryan Brown, who says, I don't really have a question, more of a comment. This weekend, I got to experience the other side of a common situation we have to endure every football season. I was watching the Alabama-Missouri basketball game, and man, it was so deliciously satisfying and blissful to hear the commentators argue that Auburn deserved to be the number one team in the nation. You guys should try it, Ryan. I can't imagine watching another basketball game and they're talking about Auburn. That would be so great.
No, that's amazing. Yeah, I'd like to. I would like to see a recording of that. So, all right.
Couple more.
All right.
This one's from Josh Corbett, who says, John and Van, I got to experience this team in person. I was at the Kentucky game, and Auburn Arena was the loudest I have ever heard. My question is, does this team have what it takes to win it all?
Yes. No doubt about it.
Yes. All right.
That's easy.
And last question for Ben Bloodworth. Question for the pod. What can the Auburn family do to shine a spotlight on the players who came before and laid the foundation for the current program success? I'd love to see some kind of reunion or banner or something for KT Harrell, et cetera, of Bruce's early years.
Yeah. That KT was the first player that Bruce had that was like really considered a really good player. And he was like the only one there for a while. He was the only one he had that first year. Bruce made a big deal about KT.
Cinnamon Bowers bringing the ball to court. No?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Man, we've come a long way. I had something else, but it's gone. Oh, well.
The best way to memorialize those players might be a few chapters in a book about the basketball team.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Oh, well, a big chunk of it will be the whole Bruce years, no doubt about it. But about us being number one. Oh, I know what I was going to say. You know, we keep saying we're going to lose a couple of games before the season's over. I'm at the point now, I wish we almost go ahead and lose, just get one out of the way, because what are the odds that we don't lose another game all the way through the national championship game in April? I feel like let's get a loss out of the way just so that we're not having to go on a win streak of ever since UConn. I don't know that I'm comfortable going into the SEC tournament and then going into the NCAA tournament, and we hadn't lost since UConn. That just makes me really nervous to think that,
I hear you, Van, and a regular mortal Auburn team, I would be with you.
Yeah.
But I'm at the other place. I'm like, no, we're just better than all these teams. This team is going to
keep winning.
Mow through them like just a brand new lawnmower just straight across the grass.
If they play the way they played on Saturday, they can beat anybody in the country. But I don't know they can play like that every single time they come out. No human beings can.
No, but I think, again, if we lose, it's going to be in a road game. They're not going to lose a home game. That's a it's not going to happen. Okay. So if we lose, it's going to be in a road game, and it's going to be in a road game where some things go wrong, right? Kessler gets in foul trouble again.
Yep.
And some guys who, you know, we're turning the ball over. Some guys aren't getting their shots to fall. But I just feel like there's so much depth and talent on this team that somebody else will step up and their shots will fall and it will be okay.
Yeah. I certainly hope so. Let me clarify. I don't want us to lose. It just makes me nervous to think that we would have to keep a gigantic winning streak going to win what we want to win.
100%. And it often, again, we talked about this. Sometimes teams need to lose to kind of let the air out of their heads and listen to the coaches again and stuff. I don't think this team is that way. But
yeah, that's true. That's true. But I think about teams like that Duke team that got all – or the there was a UNLV team like this that got all the way to the final game and lost to Duke, I believe, right? And I just worry – you run into one of those like 85 Villanova teams that's not as good as you, but they just catch lightning in a bottle and play like Ole Miss played in that first half, remember? And then you're just – oh, man. Yeah. So, well, anyway, any more questions?
Nope. That's it. Great, great listener question this week.
I don't know. We have a lot of around the SEC this week. You ready to hit the button if it's eject? Let's do it. John, our time is up. We thank you for yours. We hope you guys had a good time, and we will see you on TV watching Auburn Arena. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.